This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on VSiN.com, best bets from Adam Burke, who's going to be with us in studio in about an hour and a half on the day's MLB card. We also have Euro 2024 semifinal breakdowns from Nigel Seeley. There's still one more semifinal to go. And Zach Cohen, very shortly, will have his updated Wednesday plays on Wimbledon. All available along with betting splits, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides at our new look, VSiN.com, optimized for mobile. We were telling you right before the break, goal for Spain. They do it again. Total has already gone over. Jared has already won money in less than a half hour. Danny Olmo puts it in for Spain, and they lead 2-1 here in the 30th minute as we take a look in a second, Jared, at the updated live odds. But this, even for you betting the both teams to score, couldn't have seen this start coming. As in the two advance market right now, Spain minus 360, France plus 255. If you'd bet both sides, you could have got each at a plus $2 or greater price in the two advance market just out of the gate here as we wait to see how the rest of this thing will play out. Total goals now, 4.5 is your live total at minus,
I wouldn't be shocked 140 if this is the last over. Goal we get. I wouldn't be shocked if we land 2-1.
What comes up must come down is usually a sentiment there in the international soccer. That could also be a sentiment when it comes to Penn State football. At least it's been in the past. Jared Smith, very high in his alma mater this year. As we go out to our progressive guest line, get some thoughts here from early camp on the state of Penn State football. Greg Pickle joins us right now, covers Penn State for On3.com. Trying to stay cool there in Pennsylvania as well. Not as hot as it is for us here, Greg, in the desert heat, but we hope you're staying cool. First off, just a larger question about the head coach, James Franklin, where there was buzz back in late May when the lawsuit went against Penn State and James Franklin, the ex-team doctor awarded over $5 million. There were some early rumblings that he might get a 3-game suspension. There would be some sort of discipline, but that has not happened. What more has really gone on now that that story is out of the real public limelight here, Greg, and we get ready for camp as far as it relates to Franklin and just the general team feel around that situation?
Yeah, no doubt about it, guys. It's good to be with you. So James Franklin was dropped from that lawsuit over a filing technicality. I think the plaintiff in that case missed having him a part of it and some other athletic department people by a day or two. So he was not a defendant in that case. The defendant, which was Penn State Health and then someone who is on the health administration side of things, are appealing that lawsuit. So that's where it sits now. Still probably moving its way back through the court system here in Pennsylvania in the Harrisburg area. But yeah, there was, you know, it was one of those stories where it was the talk of a couple days, a couple news cycles, and it's kind of filtered away and hasn't really come back up since. No indication that there's anything more coming of it from his side of things or from the Penn State athletic side of things. So we'll see how that appeal process plays out, but kind of water under the bridge, I think, for the most part, as it relates to Penn State football at this point in time.
Greg, let's go back to the field. I think when I try to wrap my head around the success that Penn State's going to have this year, it feels like, I know a lot of things are changing with the Big Ten and the schedule and all this stuff, but it feels like a very familiar story. The defense is going to be really good, and the success is going to be determined on how far the quarterback takes them. Drew Aller didn't instill a whole bunch of confidence last year. Is there reason to believe that things will be different this year? And if so, why?
Yeah, so I think there's two ways to look at that. The first one, if you're glass half full for Penn State offense with Drew Aller at the controls, is that number one, Andy Koldenicki, the former Kansas play caller, now new Penn State offensive coordinator, is going to unlock some things in his game, especially the risk factor side of it that Mike Yurcich, the previous Penn State offensive coordinator, did not unlock during the 2023 season. So I think that's number one. And then number two, you believe a receiver's room that is led by Julian Fleming, the former Ohio State receiver who transferred into Penn State this offseason, and it features guys like Trey Wallace coming back, Liam Clifford, and some others, is going to be better than it was a year ago. Because let's face it, Drew Aller has some splits and some numbers that I think a lot of people were impressed by. And he also, in the biggest games, he and the offense did not show up, as you guys know very well. So to me, I think you're hoping, if you think Penn State's going to be better on offense and Aller's going to be better on offense in 2024, is that the work Andy Koldenicki did when he got here is going to lead Aller and the Penn State receivers to a better place, or at the very least, he's going to do a better job of utilizing Nick Singleton and Katron Allen and returning tight end Tyler Warren in ways that will allow Penn State to unlock some of the explosiveness that they had at times last year, but again, not when it mattered most in the year's biggest games.
He's Greg Pickle joining us right now on Sharp Money. Follow him at Greg Pickle, P-I-C-K-E-L, as we're talking Penn State. And we get into the schedule now, Greg. I think that's the big reason why you're seeing a lot of hype and a win total that's very high. It's 10.5 at DraftKings. Granted, that's heavy juice to the under. You can find some 10s out there as well. But I think a lot of people immediately respond to that and go, wait, 10 over 10 and a half in a Big Ten that's now loaded? Well, Penn State only gets one of the top four teams in the odds board on their schedule this year, even though they do have some tough road games at USC and at Wisconsin. What did you make of how this schedule broke for the Nittany Lions, where outside of Ohio State, which is a home game on November the 2nd, it's really not as daunting as it certainly could be given how the new look Big Ten is as a whole?
Yeah, we were just talking about that this morning over at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. The idea being that Penn State, from a schedule perspective, you know, it's never going to be perfect, right? But from a schedule perspective, I'm not really sure how it could have broke any better for them. I mean, you look at the number of teams on Penn State's schedule, either at home or away, that are replacing either starting quarterbacks or, in the case of Washington, obviously a lot of guys from that Huskies team a year ago. You know, so the toughest opponents on the schedule, aside from Ohio State, which of course is loaded yet again, really have a lot of question marks. And certainly in most cases, more than Penn State. So, you know, if you look at that schedule, USC, you got to go out there. Penn State has struggled at times in the James Franklin era against the best teams on its schedule, or even sometimes mediocre ones on its schedule on the road, and kind of pull out wins late or don't do so at all. So I think you look at USC and you look at Wisconsin as games where maybe things could get tricky for them. But the early part of the schedule sets up nicely. I mean, I know many think that West Virginia could be a trappish game, even though the line's 10.5 with Garrett Green back and some of the other guys, but they lose a lot up front and a ton on defense too. So, you know, if you survive that game, when are you challenged? What is this Penn State team challenged next with three new coordinators and obviously a lot of new faces at positions that were occupied by NFL draft guys? Where is it challenged again? I think you could really make an argument that depending on how things shake out at USC and at Wisconsin, it really could maybe face its biggest challenge not until November. If the sort of what's on paper also matches what happens on the field. So, yeah, I'm not sure. And I think that's why you saw the early win total come out at 9.5 juice to the over. Now you have 10s and 10s and a half to the under. But it's a very favorable schedule based on what we've seen from all these teams, obviously, through the transfer portal and the spring as well.
Yeah, when I looked at the schedule, Greg, and, you know, I'm an alum. I graduated in 08. I've been through the ups, been through the downs with this team. The two spots that stood out to me as the trickiest were at Wisconsin and at Minnesota. Obviously, Ohio State's a tricky spot. You make no qualms sure about that. USC, I like the fact that they get the bye week after that. I think that is a game that is very much in their, you know, physicality realm. But the game at Wisconsin, coming off of the bye the week before Ohio State, just smells like a trap. And then that game at Minnesota, row the boat's always been tough. I think we lost there last year, too. I mean, it's always been a house of horrors for us. So those are the spots I think are the trickiest. Is there something about this team in their between the ears factor mentality-wise that you think they're a little bit tougher? Because that's always been the thing with Penn State. I feel like physically they're there, and it's just they don't have that last finishing kick to get across the finish line in some of these trickier games.
I think that has absolutely been one of the biggest issues for Penn State. You think back to the blown lead at Ohio State and even some of the games against Ohio State and Michigan where they were, you know, potentially going to keep it close and then it got way out of hand and then there was no resolve to come back. That's been a problem as well. So does this team have that? I think that we're going to see that throughout preseason camp, and it sounds like I'm dodging the question, but when you look at the fact that they did not name any captains coming out of the spring because they didn't feel like they were ready to yet, I think it indicates that player leadership is not necessarily where it needed to be coming out of the spring. And did they accomplish that this summer to get it where it needs to be? And I think that is one of the only ways to answer that question. And we're not going to be sure until I think probably the West Virginia game when we see them out there on the field on the road. If they get challenged at some point in that game, how do they respond? So does the returning group they have combined with the newcomers that are going to see expanded roles this year have that makeup based on what we've seen in the past? Yeah, I think so. But every team is different. And this one is still, I think, finding its way in that department. And of course, they don't got much time left to find it. So they got about 2 months to get all their ducks in a row. But you're right. That is the biggest challenge that Penn State will face. Even when you talk about going to Wisconsin and these road Big Ten games that Penn State has had sometimes struggles with in the James Franklin era, that's been part of the reason why. And so I think ultimately, if you get a group like Drew Aller and you look over on the other side of the ball with Kobe King, I think those are the start of your leadership guys, and KJ Winston and Jalen Reed, the two returning safeties, are your stars. But James Franklin spent a lot of time talking about the need for guys to be more willing to hold each other accountable. And, you know, I think they have a couple like that. Nick Dawkins, the likely starting center, is one of them. But they need a couple more. And Julian Fleming's the receiver's helped in that regard as well. So jury's still out on that. I think, again, like so much with this team for so long, you are able to find glass half full and glass half empty. And that's been the case for a number of years now when you're trying to project out to what this team can be. And I think in this particular conversation, that's the same case as well.
Really good breakdowns from Greg Pickle joining us here on Sharp Money. Give him a follow at Greg Pickle, kind enough to join us on our Progressive guest line. So many twists and turns that we expect to be uncovered as this a new look first year in the Big Ten gets underway. Greg, can't thank you enough for the time. I'm sure we'll catch up with you here as we get closer to the start of week number one.
Yeah, I look forward to it, guys. Have a great rest of the summer, and it'll be here before we know it.
Absolutely. Jared Smith was at a 7 on his scale of 1 to 10 hype level.
I think it's a 6.5, frankly, after that breakdown, because I don't really have a lot of confidence. Not that Greg didn't do anything wrong. I'm not very confident this year, not with the quarterback.
You know, Jared always has reasons to be a little bit pessimistic.
But Drew Aller, save us.
When we come back, some updates around the board here, as well as on the Euro 2024, when we return on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSIN NFL betting guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus best futures bets from the VSIN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit VSIN.com/guide to get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today. That is VSIN.com/guide. A big thanks to Greg Pickle for joining us in our last segment here on Sharp Money, breaking down Penn State football. We'll have Adam Burke coming up at 5 p.m. Eastern time for a whole half hour. Jared Smith.
Wow.
Talking Major League Baseball.
Studio. I guess technically more in casino, but still similar.
Once you're inside the velvet ropes.
Yeah, the velvet ropes. The velvet ropes.
Unfortunately, we're going to make poor Adam walk from Circa tier to
it's
the
not
D.
That long of a walk. I do it all the time.
If it's just hot,
there
it's
are the, there are the velvet hot ropes, by the way, in case you're wondering.
Yeah,
what?
look at this is where we work. You could see it's just I'll be honest, I'm this a big is, fan of
it's
this
like
casino.
Doing
really
a, it's like you're doing a guide here to a bunch of school children.
This is where we work.
This is the sports book. Well, there's Sigma Derby.
Well, see, that's the thing about this place. I and my friends always ask me, what's the D? And I was like, that's where they have Sigma Derby. That's why it's called the D. No, I'm just kidding. That's not why it's called the D. But Sigma Derby to me is like the landmark. Derby, D. It's not that.
That could go in a lot of different directions.
Yeah,
when they ask
could,
you that question.
It could.
Way to be a professional there,
I
Jared.
Try to keep things
hey,
nice
how about Bacon
clean.
Nation over there? Yeah.
I've heard good things. I've never actually eaten at Bacon Nation, but I have heard good things.
There is Bacon
heard
Nation.
Good things.
Did you say there's bacon?
This has been a yes.
Okay.
There is bacon. This has been a great tour for the school
Sigma
children.
Derby's
definitely
awesome.
Watching our
yeah, the school
show right
children
up.
That want a tour of a casino.
Hey man, I would
as long
loved,
as they're not in the casino.
Would I have rather gone to the supermarket to see how milk is put into shelves or have gone to a casino when I was 9 years old?
Casino. I would
Thank
absolutely
you.
Rather go to
yeah.
a casino.
Well, they
my
can get
gambling
in,
addiction
they can
might
get
have
into
started
the
sooner than it actually really did.
I actually got reprimanded at what was then the Hilton is now the Westgate when I was about 9 years old for playing Sigma Derby.
Oh, this
and because my dad was trying to play blackjack, he just wanted to, you know, he's like, just hey, there's horses. I'll put in a quarter for you.
Wow, your Pick dad one was a great influence on you.
Didn't this guy. Start? This,
I love it.
This story started the whole "I hate Ben Wilson" that Reggie.
Yeah, it did.
By the way, that sign was going to be hung up and framed.
Who hates Ben Wilson? But, how can you hate this guy?
Sean,
he's the nicest guy in
Sean
show
McCollum,
business.
Our great audio guy, was really did not like that drawing
really?
Ben, and he ripped it up. He said, "I can't have this."
He ripped
well, Sean,
it up.
Sean's
ripped
a good it human. Up. You can't hate. Like hate is such a strong word.
Sean only hates people who don't leave their spare change in the video poker or slot machines. That's the only people that Sean McCollum hates in this world.
I didn't know that.
Sean McCollum, great resource for how to scheme Vegas. I think that's what Sean's book is. His tell-all is going to be how I scheme.
It's famous last words.
Famous last words. We'll get back to the whimsy in a little bit. On the heels though of our conversation with the great analyst for Penn State football and Greg Pickle, covers them for on3.com. Jared, you are an alum. You have identified a couple of really good plus EV ways to bet Penn State this year when you consider A, a soft schedule, but B, a tendency to fail at the highest moments, right, to completely get over the hump. We do not expect them to go 11-1 or 12-0 this year, even though the schedule is pretty soft by Big Ten standards. As a result of that, Jared, how are you approaching this year in 2024?
Well, it's a pretty repeatable process that I've done for multiple different bets, types of bets. For example, I used this process during the NFL draft, which is how we got to the Brock Bowers to go to the Raiders at 60-1. Same process. And that is, you take the draft position of the guy and you try to figure out which team in that little window is going to pick him. And we were fortunate a little bit that all the quarterbacks went early. And that's why Bowers fell in that spot, in that, you know, 12, 13 spot, right where he was projected to go, right to the Raiders who were sitting there to take him. So let's do the same thing, but let's apply that process to the win total and the exact wins market. So Penn State win total opened 9.5, jumped to 10.5. It seems like there's some barriers around those two numbers. Seems like 9.5 was too low, but 10.5 is too high, and we're kind of at, let's call it 9.75 or 10.25, whichever quarter win of the spectrum you want to go on. Well, the one thing about Penn State is they haven't been the ceiling, but they haven't been the floor either. Like, they've been pretty consistent in the 8, 9, 10 win range over the last decade or so that James Franklin's been the coach. I think this year is even more so tighter range because you have less difficult games. You know, there's always two games on Penn State's schedule that you know they're going to be a dog in, and if they're not a dog, it's going to be a pick 'em, and you know they're probably going to lose because James Franklin can never beat Ohio State and Michigan. Well, guess what? Only half of those teams are on the schedule this year. It's Ohio State, and it's at home. So there's at least some hope that that game won't be as difficult as it's been at the Shoe. And then you look at the rest of the schedule, and yeah, there's some tricky spots. I think that game at Wisconsin, the look ahead for Ohio State, is very tricky. I think that game at Minnesota at the end of the year, let's say Penn State's already accomplished a high, lofty win. Let's say they beat Ohio State. Now you got to go on the road and beat Minnesota in a cold, nasty, whatever weather they're playing in Minneapolis. And oh, by the way, that's the game that maybe gets you into the playoffs. So yeah, there's tricky spots on the schedule, but I feel very confident either 9 or 10 wins is the correct answer for Penn State. We're going to trade within that narrow range that the win total's been bet up and down. So exactly 9 wins at DraftKings plus 370. Exactly 10 wins is plus 280. You put a unit on both of those, one of them hits, you come out on the plus side of the ledger. I would lean to the 9, frankly. I think 9-3 gets you into the playoff this year in the Big Ten. 10-2, I think you're absolutely in. And you're getting a bigger payout. So, I don't know, go 3/4 of a unit on exactly 9 wins at plus 370 and maybe go a full unit on exactly 10 wins at plus 280. You get a better payout on the 9. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it, because I think 9 or 10 is very much the narrow range for the Nittany Lions this year.
Just for clarification, the Ohio State game is home this year. And that's also one of those things where, hey, at the very least, you're likely going to get a, you know, that's post-Halloween. I believe that, I don't know, is that going to be technically Halloween weekend this year? Because Halloween is like midweek, but that's November the 2nd. Well,
that's the whiteout game.
That will be the whiteout game.
Is it officially the whiteout? Because that's one thing that
I don't know yet, but I'm assuming it will be.
Because this is the thing that's been kind of frustrates me if I'm a Penn State fan, is like the whiteout is such a unique environment. It's intimidating. I mean, I go back to, you know, as a Michigan fan, Shea Patterson.
I was in attendance for the first one in 2005.
But Shea Patterson couldn't get the snap off. I had to call a timeout first play. A game like that against Ohio State needs to be the whiteout.
And it will.
And it should not be a big noon kickoff on Fox. And
unfortunately, it might. Well, here's the thing that changes the math this year. We might get a home playoff game. There might be a big – I'd rather save the whiteout for that. Now, maybe you do a second whiteout, but I don't know. Home playoff game in December?
I feel like in an era where traditions are being broken all the time,
we're
going to
make a second whiteout. I don't know why they only do one. Frankly, I do a whiteout for every game. I mean, just do it. I mean, you got the best home field, I think, in the country.
Poor Bowling Green is just going in here. What the heck is this? I didn't sign up for this.
I think my first Penn State game that in my freshman year was against Bowling Green. I forget who they played. They played some MAC team. It might have been Akron.
If you went to a Power 5 school in the Midwest, you're likely as a student, your first college football experience was against a MAC team. Case in point for me, Missouri, Miami of Ohio.
There you go.
It was about 98 degrees and humid. Mizzou won 17-3 in just an awful football game. But
yeah, those early
games, corroborates.
I hated
it. Was also an 11 a.m. kickoff. That was very tough
I hate those early
kickoffs. Young college students figuring out the proper tailgate timeline.
I would be disappointed if they did. I mean, what you're saying makes sense. Why they're probably going to want Fox is probably going to want that game, but it does ruin a little bit of the fanfare, I think, when you play it at noon.
No question. Which, well, we do have at least I'm at least glad we found a good betting angle with that.
I think that honestly, I don't think that minus, is a bet that I would
minus 140 to make the playoff as well.
Yeah, see, that's
you
the
really
like,
want to lay no. that kind of juice when it's a season long bet, and there's so many unknowns when it comes to the selection process. This
I year. Would much because to me, 9 wins gets you in the playoff. Now, of course, they could win 11 and then you lose, or they could win 12-0 from your lips to God's ears. But I don't see that happening. And again, I'm wrong all the time, but I think 9-3 and 10-2 are the only two options I see for Penn State season. And I think the fact that you're getting, if you bet both of those, I know you got to do some math. I don't know what the exact number really is on the aggregate, but it's somewhere in the plus money territory. I think that's better than going minus odds on the playoff bet or minus odds on a win total.
I'm just glad we found a way to bet this because Jared Smith, he went from a 7 on the hype scale to a 6.5. But
I'm not excited about our season. Well, the hype scale to me is like national champ because right. the only thing you're hyping for Penn State, that's the only thing they haven't done. I've seen every other bowl game win. I've never seen a playoff game. I've never seen a Big Ten championship. I've seen a Big Ten championship. I've never seen a national championship.
What I would tell you, though, with what Greg Pickle was laying out, there's still a lot of work to be done. You don't know how the leadership is really going to pan
that's
out on both sides of the ball.
Me.
Well, the positive is you don't have to face Oregon, Ohio State, or Michigan in weeks 3-5. You don't really get anybody until it's really you should be 5-0 going to L.A., taking on USC October the 12th. That is the perfect recipe to get your team in order, basically treat that first month plus as a preseason, and be ready to rock without a whole lot of fatigue and injury piling up as you continue. I think that'll really play into their favor this year. That's 1 hour down here on Sharp Money. When we come back, halftime at Euro 2024, a big day at Wimbledon. We'll tell you about it next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
It is hour number 3 of Sharp Money as we welcome you back to downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson. Jared Smith is here. Our producer, Wyatt Tomchek, here as well. In for Patrick the rest of the week, as well as Dustin Sweetelson, who is on his vacation. But to fill in for the outstanding wardrobe of Dustin, we had to get our guy Adam Burke on, who I got to host with last week. It was a reprisal. There's Adam. Reprisal of the old Run Line show, which we used to do here at the network. One of the great, as I always tell Adam, Jared, best show in VSiN history to ever get canceled. And we can
list.
We can definitively state that it was the best show in this network's history that does not exist anymore.
I'm going to fight you on that one for Gone Racing.
Oh, I will fight with you on that because I agree. I think ours was better. Anyway, he's Adam Burke, VSiN.
This is 2-on-1 handicap match. I don't like this.
We do get the 2-on-1 advantage. Love the shirt today.
Thank you. Appreciate it. This is from the Alan Jackson collection from the Chattahoochee music video.
Way down yonder on the Chattahoochee, right? That's the song.
Yeah, there you go.
See, I'm a country music guy.
I wasn't expecting that.
Do you want to hear a fun story of why I like country music? I hated country music growing up, and then I moved to Virginia right before high school. I played high school baseball in Virginia, and our coach was from like the sticks of Virginia, and he forced us to listen to country music every morning workout, and it grew on me. And then by the time I was graduating high school, I was going to, Keith Urban concerts.
Nice. Respect.
Fun story.
Look, as long as there's cold beer, Adam's going to go.
Oh, tons of cold beer.
That's a good point. Cold beer is an easy selling point for me. Also, when it's 120 degrees outside, it is here right now, cold beer sounds great.
It's tough. Let's start with the injury news of the day here, AB, since it just dropped about 15, 20 minutes ago. Tyler Glasnow of the Dodgers to the IL. The latest in the recent woes of pitching here for the Dodgers, who did take 2 of 3 from Milwaukee over the weekend, yet continued to not get many innings out of their starters, which, as you know, handicapping baseball day-to-day, not exactly a great optimal setup when you are expecting to be a World Series contender and have to use as many bullpen arms as the Dodgers are right now.
Yeah, so look, I think the most important thing about this, and we were talking about this a little bit before the break, it's not the arm. At least not yet for Tyler Glasnow. It is the back. Gave up 5 runs in each of his last 2 starts over his last 9 innings. 10 hits. Only 1 strikeout 2 starts ago against the Giants. Had 7 strikeouts last time out against Milwaukee. But look, they have a major league rotation and then some on the injured list. Yet they still have enough available arms to field a pretty decent starting rotation. It's not great by any means, but it's at least competent. And so, look, I thought this team was kind of coasting through the regular season a little bit anyway. Because it's World Series or bust for them, right? That's all that they want to try to achieve. It's just a matter now of making sure that everybody's healthy, because as much of a threat as the Padres may kind of be on the periphery here in terms of the NL West, they're still 7.5 games back. The Dodgers have plenty of cushion here. Yeah, you'd like to get the bye if you can, but for them, I think it's more about getting to October healthy. So nip this in the bud with glass now at this point in time and hope that there's nothing that comes as a follow-up.
Bullpen scares me. I saw the XFIP over the last 30 days is one of the worst in baseball. And obviously when you have glass now out and you got guys like Bobby Miller and Landon Knack, like guys that just aren't going to give you deep 6-7 innings consistently, that bullpen's going to get worked. And we'll see. It's going to be an interesting stretch. I'm not saying the Dodgers are going to miss the playoffs, but they're one of the least profitable teams in baseball this year. So even though they're winning games, they're not making anyone any money because they're losing too many games, the big favorite. The American League, I don't want to say more muddled at the top. I think Baltimore's better than New York. Do you agree? And you get the Orioles right now -130 to win the division. I think the better bet to make right now is for them to be the number one seed in the American League at +120. To me, it seems like the Yankees are kind of, they hit their peak and now they're trending down. Baltimore's young, hungry, and they want that division again.
Yeah, look, and I also think that, I mean, Cleveland, I don't really view Cleveland as a threat for the number one seed. I mean, we're kind of seeing some of their regression hit a little bit here and there. They still find ways to win games. I'm convinced they have the best coaching staff in all of baseball. And that's how they've kind of been able to maximize and squeeze as much production as possible out of all of their guys. But I don't think they're good enough to really sustain this type of pace throughout the remainder of the season. So I do think that ultimately you're looking at Baltimore and New York. And the thing for Baltimore is this. I mean, they need one starting pitcher right at the trade deadline. That's about all that they need. They could use another bullpen arm. I don't think that that's a bad idea. I mean, I don't think Felix Bautista is ever going to make it back this season. We'll see. I think it's a long shot to be able to return. They maybe need one bullpen arm, but they really need one starter, and that's it. And a team like Cleveland probably needs two starters, and a team like the Yankees could use bullpen help. They could use lineup help. You know what? I don't think they're in trouble, though. I think New York is still a very good team. Look, there's a very realistic possibility that the last 2 months of Gerrit Cole are better than any trade deadline acquisition that's available.
I agree with that.
If he's going to get stronger. And Rodon is in a rough patch right now. I'm actually fading him a little bit tonight, so we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. But I think Rodon will ultimately be kind of okay. Stroman is a reliable dude. Nestor Cortez is solid enough. Clark Schmidt will come back. And frankly, he was maybe their most consistent starting pitcher. And Luis Gil was really good last time out. So I'm not really worried about the Yankees. I know people are panicking and this and that, but the bigger issue for me was that they couldn't sustain the pace they had early in the season. We've seen them drop back now. I think the rest of the year, the Yankees will be just fine. So I think people are just kind of overreacting a little bit to what we've seen here lately. Is Baltimore better? I think you can make that case, especially if they get a Jack Flaherty type or something like that. But I don't think the Yankees are some ruined team that's all of a sudden going to fall substantially off the pace. I think they'll be just fine.
It is such a good point, and it speaks to what happens when baseball becomes the main day-to-day sport and you have big market teams and are very polarizing on top of that. Yep. You go through one midseason swoon and it's up, sky's falling, you got to fire Aaron Boone. None of these pitchers should be in the rotation, and we tend to overreact. As far as that game tonight, though, Adam, it will be probably Yankee Stadium South. The Yankees do have their spring training stadium in Tampa, Florida. I've been to the Yankee spring training stadium, but I've never been to the
Steinbrenner
Trop.
Steinbrenner Field,
yes, which is always a great amalgamation of extremely elderly New Yorkers making their way to Florida in the months of late February and March. What do you make, though, of the matchup tonight here where you get the Yankees? It's been a really tough spell. You talk about all the struggles here, Adam, for a Rodon type who will try to bounce back here against Ryan Pepiot, who has not really provided the sort of return Tampa Bay thought they were getting when he was the prize piece in that Tyler Glasnow trade in the offseason.
Yeah, so a bit of a line move here actually against me, because I'm seeing this one 7.5 out there in the marketplace now. But I think these two teams are capable of putting up some runs here tonight. You know, Carlos Rodon is a guy that he struggled here of late, 4.45 ERA, 4.49 expected, 4.63 FIP for the year. But a 10.89 ERA, 6.80 FIP in his last 19 innings. Giving up 24 runs on 31 hits. He still has the swing and miss stuff, but the command has been really, really bad. The Rays throughout the course of this season have been a very, very right-handed heavy lineup. I've been looking to play on them against a lot of left-handed starting pitching. This is a spot tonight where I think you can play on them against Rodon. But also, as much as I like Ryan Pepiot, he's the guy who works up in the zone a lot with the fastball. Fastball percentage, 52%. Pitches, you know, kind of tries to throw around the letters a lot. Against some lineups, that's more effective than it is against others. The Yankees are a top 10 offense in batting average, slugging percentage, and weighted on base average. In the attack zones per Statcast, where Pepiel wants to throw his fastball. So I think that the Yankees can have some success tonight. I think the Rays will have some success tonight. And also, both of these bullpens have been quite bad over the last couple of weeks. So I like the over 7.5. I mean, I had over 8 earlier today, but I like the over 7.5 a good amount.
Anything else on the card for today we should be aware of, sir?
Yeah, there's a couple that I like here. We'll stay with this AL East theme. And Toronto's on the road against the San Francisco Giants here. Yusei Kikuchi on the mound. Blake Snell returning for the Giants. I will readily admit I have absolutely no idea what we're going to get out of Blake Snell tonight. Snell had 5 no-hit innings in his rehab start at AAA.
Really good.
Looked really good.
Start.
I think he struck out 9. So he looked really good.
Start the game.
But I don't know what we're going to get out of him.
Yeah.
So for me, this is a one-sided handicap where I'm fading Yusei Kikuchi, who's also been struggling a little bit here of late. The Giants are an offense that throughout the course of the season has been very, very good against left-handed pitching. That's especially true here over the last 30 days. 338 weighted on base average, 124 WRC+. They've been really good against southpaws. Kikuchi's having some command issues right now. I like the Giants' first 5 team total over 1.5 in this one. This was $1.30 earlier in the morning in terms of the VIG. I'll check it as I'm going through here. Still $1.30 out there at DraftKings. So this is one that hasn't moved against me, one that I still like. I think the Giants will have some offensive success today against Kikuchi, who, you know, I mean, maybe it's kind of leaking into his mind right now that he is very, very likely to get traded at the trade deadline. And I think some contender will get a pretty good pitcher, but right now he's struggling.
Well, that also goes into some of the handicaps now for these pitchers.
Yep.
Within trade deadline teams, and Max Scherzer is going to be a name you figure gets more and more buzz here because of the contract situation. Texas has just been unable to turn it on at all this year. He goes tonight against Ronzi Contreras there in Anaheim tonight. Adam is getting a good amount of market support in his favor, up to $1.80. But what do you make of the not only the Scherzer situation, but the fact that he's only had a couple starts since coming back from injury?
Yeah, you know, the strikeouts haven't been there for Scherzer yet, but he's still been really, really effective. 2.70 ERA over 16 and 2/3. But as I mentioned, only 11 strikeouts. So he's not really the same guy that we've seen him be in the past. Frankly, nobody for this Texas team seems like the same guy from what we saw last year. Wyatt Langford is playing really, really well, the rookie. But other than that, I mean, Marcus Semien has kind of gone in the tank here. Corey Seager seems to be banged up with something every other week. They're still waiting for Josh Jung to come back. I think he'll be a big help when he does come back. But this Rangers team, I mean, I've been expecting them to kind of figure it out here, and it hasn't happened yet. And the Astros have really closed the gap with the Mariners. The Mariners are letting everybody kind of come up back up towards them. But the Rangers still haven't capitalized. So they're talking about being a pretty big seller here. I think it makes some sense. I don't know what Scherzer's market value actually is at this point in time. But they're a pretty big favorite here tonight against an Angels team that's been playing a little bit better, you know, over the last month or so than I expected them to.
Yeah, I think Scherzer's going to get dealt.
Sure.
I think the Rangers made it clear recently that they're very much open for sale this year.
How about the Astros being favored now to win that division?
I think Houston is – I thought they were going to sell, but maybe not. Seattle's giving them a second life.
Yeah, I don't know that Houston had much to sell anyway.
True.
You know, because just the composition of that team, and they have to try to get younger at certain positions. Their rotation's been really banged up. But, I mean, for Texas, it makes a ton of sense, right? If you don't think you're as good as Baltimore or as good as the Yankees or even as good as Cleveland, it's a good time to capitalize on a market that's limited on sellers.
Texas right now, 5.5 back of the Mariners at the top of that division. Adam has one more baseball play. We'll give it to you next. And when we come back, talk a little bit of NFL and some early college football thoughts ahead of the CFB guide release here on VSiN Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than 1 month, and lucky for you, the VSiN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new NFL betting guide. To access this invaluable guide, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, and for a limited time, we're offering an unbeatable deal. You get a full year of VSiN Pro for just $199 instead of the usual $240, and as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That is 13 months of access to everything VSiN offers, including daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all of our special edition betting guides like the NFL guide to keep you informed and winning throughout the year. You just go to VSiN.com/subscribe, use promo code SHARP to get 13 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 and gain instant access to our NFL betting guide. I call this man the patriarch of the NFL betting guide.
Adam Burke, even though that's not his official title. I just think it sounds cooler than VSiN managing editor, but that's why I'm not in charge around here. I'm Ben Wilson. I'm just a lowly host. Adam Burke, the best dressed man of the three right now, joining us here to talk some more baseball, some NFL, some college football. Jared Smith here as well. Adam, we'll get into some football talk here in a second. One more baseball play for tonight. Now that the Wimbledon, the Euros are done for the day, people want to get some baseball action. That's the only thing they have to bet right now, and we're happy to have it because at this time next week it will be the All-Star game. So there will not be much to bet.
Next week's going to be
of all. We can't wait for this week in the VSiN calendar. We always circle it. But as far as tonight, really fascinating divisional matchup here is the Milwaukee Brewers. His lead is down to 4.5 over the St. Louis Cardinals. They take on the Pittsburgh Pirates tonight. And Jared and I were just talking about likelihood of regression in the second half for Milwaukee. I believe with the additions of Devin Williams, which is basically like a trade deadline acquisition, and then Aaron Civale, this team will have enough to get to the finish line, but there is at least one pitcher, Adam. You have looked deep on the numbers. We used to do something called the regression report on the run line, Adam, and this guy certainly qualifies as a pitcher tonight here for Milwaukee.
Yeah, Colin Ray. So the guy on the mound here tonight for Milwaukee, and actually this is another one that I'm kind of surprised with the line move on this. Over at DraftKings, under 17.5 outs, plus 145 now. It's plus 115 this morning when I wrote up my daily article over at VSiN.com. Look, I mean, this is a guy that I'm trying to fade here for a variety of different reasons. You look at Ray, 3.34 ERA, that's fantastic over 94 and a third, but 5.17 expected ERA, 4.61 FIP, really, really low strikeout rate at 16.8%. That's going to be really hard to sustain a left on base percentage of 81.2%. So when you look at pitchers that are in line for regression, right, you look at left on base percentage. If it's an outlier, as Colin Ray's is, you try to find out why, right? Does he strike out a lot of guys? Is he able to strand a lot of runners? Well, he doesn't strike out a lot of guys. And also his contact management numbers are league average or slightly worse. So I'm not really a big believer in him. The Pirates, sixth in weighted on base average here in the month of July so far. So small sample size, but they're swinging it pretty well. 4.68 slugging. Colin Ray is a guy that's given up a barrel percentage over 9%. I don't see him getting through six innings tonight. He might pitch okay, but I think he's going to have some danger and some trouble to work out of. I like the under 17.5 outs for Ray, which, again, you can get now at plus 145 over DK.
I wonder if a small part of that would be on why there has been interest on his over. The big injury news, it's not huge because it's day-to-day, but O'Neill Cruz left yesterday with a hamstring strain. He's
day-to-day.
That's
a big move for one guy in a lineup.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, that might have been a part of it, but to Jared's
point, a prominent prop guy probably gave out over. And that juiced it up because the prop markets are relatively low limits and it doesn't take a whole lot to move them. And I've seen the most prominent prop people give stuff out, and you've got like 30 seconds to get that thing in before it's steaming up. I think to your point, though, if you look at what Colin Ray has done, that is, to me, the biggest like target when you're looking at – we have a whole half season of data now, so we have a lot to chew on. I don't want to say it's easier to find plays, but the regression stuff really stands out to you the more data we have, and then your expected numbers are like, wait a minute, that doesn't look right.
Yeah, I mean, his expected ERA is almost two runs higher, and expected ERA takes into account things like strikeout rate, takes into account contact management, so hard hit percentage, barrel rate, batted ball distribution, all these different types of things where Ray just doesn't really shine in any particular area. So I don't think that this current pace that he's on is sustainable, running a 3.34 ERA. And look, I mean, maybe the Brewers have just kind of figured something out here, and they are a very, very good defensive team, which does help. But still, it's hard to complete six innings in the big leagues now. So, you know, if the Pirates are selective, if they are able to hit some balls hard, put some balls in play, get some, even if they don't score in those run scoring opportunities, it's still going to cause Ray to have to work a little bit harder, higher stress. Also, the Brewers are coming off of an off day, so the bullpen is completely available, where the Cardinals are closing ground now on Milwaukee. So if you're Pat Murphy, maybe you pull a guy like Colin Ray a little bit earlier just to try and secure that victory.
At Brewers Pirates, they open up a series tonight. That division lead now down to 4.5 there for Milwaukee. Final week of full baseball before the All-Star break coming up early next week. Adam Berth with us, VSiN managing editor at VSiN.com. Big part of the NFL betting guide and will be a big part of the college football betting guide soon to come out, Adam. And you, as part of your many assignments, myriad assignments, we can say, for the guide, you're writing up all about the new head coaches in college football, of which there are 28 of them this year. That for starters, a great resource here for bettors. You can give us a little inkling of what that article is about. But needless to say, there's a lot of moving parts already in college football. Then you add in new head coaches. You really, as a bettor, need to know what these guys are all about and what pedigree they bring in before you're making bets.
Yeah, so all the assignments are out for our college football betting guide. I'll be writing up the AAC, the ACC, and the Sun Belt to go along with a piece on the new head coaches, as you alluded to, how to put together a very, very basic power ratings model, and then also refreshing my home field advantage numbers. So along with editing, putting together that guide, helping with the formatting and all of that, a lot of assignments for me here as well, which self-inflicted. That is my own fault. But yeah,
I like how Adam's just talking about the demise of Adam Burke, basically, in third person.
You know, we're all pessimists here in this business, Ben, as well, you know.
That's why you get the bright shirt on.
Yeah, right? I try to lift my spirits, brighten the mood here a little bit. But yeah, I did actually write up a draft yesterday looking at all 28 new head coaches. There are two head coaches as well that were interims last year that will be the full-time head coaches this year. It's David Braun at Northwestern, who was wildly successful, and Spencer Danielson at Boise State. We'll probably have a 29th new head coach, depending on what happens with Blake Anderson at Utah State. So this is still kind of a fluid article at this point in time. But, guys, a lot of new head coaches here, a lot of coaching movement, a lot of interesting things where guys are leaving being a head coach to be a coordinator, whether it's at a major program or in the NFL. It seems like a lot of coaches are kind of disenfranchised with the transfer portal, college football free agency, and all of that. And, you know, some teams really took a step back. I think other teams may take a little bit of a step forward based on the new sideline boss.
Well, there's so much change in college football, and this year is maybe the most change that we've seen, because obviously the transfer portal has really impacted a lot of the offseason stuff, but now the in-season numbers, futures markets, playoffs, all of these things are just completely distorted because of the expanded field. If you were going to give an overarching piece of advice to someone getting ready to handicap the college football season, is it just be comfortable being uncomfortable? That's what, like, to me, that's kind of the mindset I've adopted with trying to change my traditional approach, because these markets are changing dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, everything's going to be really tough in college football this year because, you know, you have realignment now, right? Yep. So you're going to have Stanford and Cal in the ACC.
It's crazy.
I mean, they're going to log insane travel miles this season. And so are the teams that are going to go out there and play against them. Also now in the Big 12, you've got teams like Colorado, Arizona, Utah. So now you're going to have some of these defenses that are typically depth shy in the Big 12 going and playing in elevation. You know, so maybe in some respects, home field advantage could be a little bit more powerful this season than it has been in previous seasons, just because now you're going to unfamiliar places, difficult to travel to venues, stuff like that. You know, there's just a whole lot of moving parts here. But the one thing I think that's going to be kind of evident throughout the course of this season is that because of the transfer portal, it is much more difficult for Group of Five teams to keep the players that are really good. So I think you're going to see a lot of, we'll call it parity to be nice, but I think you're going to see a lot of inconsistency in the Group of Five ranks, where week in and week out, if you do your own power ratings, you're going to be adjusting these teams significantly from one week to the next and then adjusting them back. I think it's going to be really, really hard to try and get a grasp of a lot of these Group of Five teams this season. Yep. And that's something that I think is going to be a bit of a challenge. And one of the reasons why, you know, I wanted to focus on the new head coaches, because I think some of these guys will be able to find more success keeping their teams consistent than others.
And how about UCLA, a great example? UCLA has to go to Hawaii. Yep. They go to Rutgers. They go to Nebraska this year. They go to Penn State. They have a first-year head coach in Deshaun Foster who has zero experience as a top coach at all. And Chip Kelly was a great example, Adam, of what you just talked about. Head coaches saying, you know what, transfer portal, having to re-recruit my roster every year, I'm good. I'll go make a crap ton of money as an OC at Ohio State and just move on. It's amazing how that, to me, is the one team you could isolate. 5.5, that is getting some action to the under now, minus 150, but I don't see where the wins are coming from for UCLA.
Yeah, I don't know either. And the Deshaun Foster thing, I mean, you know, that was just trying to keep everybody in-house that they possibly could. I mean, they had to scramble a little bit, and Utah State will be in a similar situation if Blake Anderson is indeed fired, where maybe I'm underselling a guy like Foster, but he has no coordinator experience, no head coaching experience on a team that's lost a lot of talent and plays a difficult schedule.
Last time I checked, that's not a great combination.
Less than ideal.
Less than ideal, needless to say. You follow Adam at Skating Tripods, VSiN Senior Managing Editor. I throw in the senior there. It's not technically his title, but I feel like he ought to have it. He's Adam Burke joining us here on Sharp Money. We'll take a look at the MLB card for this Tuesday when we come back on Sharp Money.